Hello and welcome to the Pueblo Star Journal's mayor coverage. I'm Ben Kaysen here with Mayor Nick Gratisar. Mayor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you so much for the time coming in. It's been so fun to talk to all the candidates, getting ready for the election. Just a reminder, if you're listening to this, you need to vote November 7th coming up. Make sure you vote in this election. And then if there is a runoff, that'll be January 4th, the next election.
It's about the 23rd of January.
Oh, yeah.
The election day will be about the 23rd of January.
Oh, did it get switched?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
There might be a debate or something on the 4th.
Okay.
But the election will actually take place later in January.
Perfect. There we go. Makes sense. Awesome. Well, let's just jump right in, Nick. So if you won this election again, what would you like to see Pueblo look like at the end of your next term? So 2028.
Ooh, I'd like to see Pueblo be a vibrant, prosperous community with a more vigorous downtown than we have now. More people living, working, and playing downtown. Hmm. I mean, I think we need to get some housing in some of these upper stories of some of our buildings that would appeal to people. And I'd love to see some new construction of a market rate housing downtown that would invigorate the downtown scene, if you will. I think there are some of those plans being made. And we're just hoping that interest rates will stabilize a little bit. The economy will get to the point where people can pull the trigger and bring those projects to fruition because they're going to make a big difference in the city of Pueblo.
Mm. How would you incentivize people to be able to use those spaces that maybe aren't used here downtown as the mayor?
Well, one of the things we've done, and not so much the spaces downtown, but we changed the zoning laws so that you can have a commercial property on the lower level and residential properties up above. We still haven't seen a whole lot of that change taking place. Obviously, for residential properties, we've tried to incentivize them depending on where the property's at and, you know, what the clientele is going to be for those properties by waiving and encouraging other utilities to waive plant investment fees in the wastewater plant, the waterworks plant, those kind of things, to try to give them that economic incentive to get that project going. So those are the kind of things we look at on a case-by-case basis.
Mm, that makes sense. So how would you address crime in Pueblo as the mayor?
Oh, boy. Well, number one, we're trying to hire more police officers. Mm. Since I've been the mayor, I've hired 70 new police officers. We're still about 50 police officers short. Since January 1 of this year, we have increased the starting pay for a patrol officer by 28%. Mm. So you can now make more as a police officer in the city of Pueblo than you can in Colorado Springs. Mm. We hope that will attract people to be police officers. Police officers are sort of the key to keeping crime down because now with the shortage of officers we have, they're just sort of running from call to call, don't have a chance to be proactive, if you will. Although we have established a DICE team, two DICE teams, which is two officers each that are proactive. They don't respond to calls all day long. They go out and interact with the homeless people, people on the streets, with the business people, and try to be a little more proactive. We've also, because of the shortage, set up a SOS program where instead of sending some officers to respond to certain calls, we send a mental health professional, an EMT, and a peer to somebody who, for instance, might be sleeping in the park. You know, you don't need a police officer to respond to that call. They can take care of the serious calls, but somebody's got to go out there. So this team was established about 6 weeks ago. They're taking some of that. Some of those calls away from officers so they can concentrate on the more serious ones. And I guess the final thing is that we are in the process of setting up a real-time crime center that will take advantage of technology and civilians to help investigate crimes almost as soon as the call comes into 911. They'll start doing research and gathering information to help solve those crimes, taking advantage of camera systems. And part of it will be purchasing additional camera systems around town and placing them in some of those trouble spots. We've got two cameras on trailers now that we can move around from time to time and monitor them in the dispatch center, keep our eye out for them. And so this real-time crime center will tie into those cameras. So when a call comes in, we'll be able to tell, is there a camera in the area? Mm. What kind of cars are leaving there? There'll be license plate readers in some parts of town that can tell what cars are going in and out of an area at what time. And if they're associated with an incident that takes place, we're hoping that we'll be much more aggressive in solving some of those crimes that now we're not able to. So we're doing a lot. And I think it's paying off. I mean, the real serious crimes are down in Pueblo this year, 15% over what they were last year. That's the last report I got. So that's good news. Crime's still too high. And I know still people still feel uncomfortable and at times unsafe, but I think we're headed in the right direction. We've got to get more police officers though to really keep things moving in that direction.
So kind of on that topic, what would you do to address homelessness in Pueblo?
Well, homelessness in Pueblo is a complicated problem. The actual number of homeless hasn't increased that much in the last 4 years. I think the last count I saw was that in the HMIS system, the number was actually down. The agencies are required to keep track of the numbers. But the point in time count between 2021 and 2023, I think the number of homeless people actually was 30, more than just increased by 30 people. So this idea that homelessness is doubling, tripling every year, that's just not true. One of the things that we found in Pueblo is that the number one condition that are afflicting the homeless people here is a mental health disorder. That's above drug addiction, above alcohol addiction, above physical disabilities. It's a mental health disorder. And I think that we've got to get more aggressive in our mental health outreach and get some of these people treatment for their mental illnesses before we're going to make a real dent in the homeless problem, because unless they're in touch with reality, you can put them in a house or an apartment. They're not going to stay there. They'll tear it up. You've got to get them back in touch with reality. And it's unfortunate that our civil mental health system has sort of deteriorated. We closed all the beds at the Mental Health Institute. Parkview, just earlier this year, closed their mental health wards. So we're hoping that we can get some of those beds reopened so that we have a place to take people and get them back on their medications and get them stabilized so that they're able to live in a more realistic, normal fashion.
Yeah. What other steps would you take when it comes to mental health outreach for people like that? You mentioned the beds, but is there anything else that's on your mind?
Well, yeah, we've got to partner with the agencies. I mean, with Health Solutions, they're a premier mental health agency. Public Community Health Center, they have a mental health team as well. I've had those people in my office saying, you know, we've got to get some mental health treatment to these individuals. And that's how this Solutions Outreach Services team sort of was established. It's been established. We're trying to get grants so it can be, instead of one team, we can have more than one team so that you can have that intensive follow-up treatment for some of these individuals that have severe mental illnesses, but they're just living on the street. And that's, it's pretty hard to make sure they're taking their medications on a regular basis when that's the case. So I've been to California with people from the state of Colorado to examine what they're doing there. We've got a trip scheduled at this point to New York City to see what they're doing with the homeless individuals there who have severe mental illnesses as well. So we're exploring all these, trying to identify the best practices that will make a dent in this problem.
So you mentioned it earlier a little bit, but I just want to ask again, how would you address affordable housing in Pueblo?
Well, number one, we're working with developers. One of the things we did that I think it won't happen overnight, but it'll have an effect on housing, is we passed a vacant property registration system so that if you have a house that nobody lives in for more than 30 days in a year, you have to register it with the city. And if you don't, you've got to pay a fine. So it's about $1,000 a year you have to pay to keep that house vacant. I don't want them to be kept vacant because they're, you know, the ones there in our old neighborhoods are boarded up. Homeless people break into them. They set them on fire and they create a nuisance in the neighborhood. So we're putting these liens on the houses. We're offering those liens for sale to the public. You'll see another 25 of those liens come up here in the next couple of weeks, I hope. Hoping they'll buy the liens, foreclose the liens. They'll become the owners of the property. And they'll be able to go in and rehab the property that the current owner hasn't been willing to do. The other thing we're exploring at this point is taking some money and actually going out and buying those houses from some of these owners and us hiring contractors that can go in and rehab them. For some of these houses, for $150,000, $200,000, you can turn them into pretty nice living quarters if you have the wherewithal to do that. So we're hoping that that'll happen. That does a couple of things. Number one, it clears up the blight in the neighborhood. Number two, makes a housing unit available to somebody in the community. I think usually at a pretty reasonable price, because you're not in it for a lot of money. I mean, it's not a $500,000 house that you're renting out to somebody, or that you're trying to sell somebody. It's a, you know, $200,000 or $250,000 house. So, those are the kind of things we're looking on. You know, we need to increase our entire housing supply if we're going to get affordable housing. And even if, and it's sort of counterintuitive, but even if you develop market rate housing, that increases the affordable housing supply, because those people who can pay for that market rate are not competing for those lower priced houses with other individuals and driving the prices up. They're doing it now because there's nothing else on the market. There's nowhere else they can go. So if we have another product there that they can afford and they can move into, they'll leave that other stuff alone. So it's an interesting dynamic, but we're about 9,500 units short in the next 10 years, according to a study that the city and county had done in 2021.
Wow. So what's one issue that may not have a ton of attention from people that you would want to dig deeper into? Something that maybe no one asks you very often about that you find interesting that you want to dive into?
Ooh, you know, I think... one of the big problems that we're working on, and people talk about it a lot, obviously, is the gang problems and the gang violence and, you know, teenagers with guns, those kind of things. That's one of the things that we've spent some time on. We've worked with the school district. Some of our opioid money we're putting into some middle school programs. Some of our federal ARPA money we put into middle school programs to try to help kids in middle school make different choices when they're offered drugs or offered the opportunity to get in the gang. Those are long-term kind of things. You know, you don't see results from that overnight, but I think in the long term, they'll make a difference. And that's sort of where you have to start, is when they're starting to make those decisions at those ages. And some of the programs that we've done have been very successful, to the extent that we had a pilot program, Let's Taco About It, at Heaton Middle School, where we took five or six kids after school and engaged them. And it was so successful that we did 450 kids last summer. And the school district now has expanded that program to three middle schools during this school year. So it's the kind of thing, and they did that because they could see a change in the kids' behavior when they were engaged in this kind of program. So we've been very fortunate to be supported by Bloomberg Philanthropies as a result of my chief of staff and some other city employees going to a city's leadership initiative that in my first year in office. So we've developed some nationwide relationships that have really been of benefit to Pueblo in terms of grants and these other programs, like the one I just described, being made available to us that can have long-term effects on the community.
Well, I think my last question for you, Nick, is what's so special about Pueblo? What's something good going on in the community that you're proud of?
Well, obviously, I think are on the verge of an economic boom. But what's so special about Pueblo is its people. You know, people came to Pueblo 150 years ago, 125 years ago, from all over the world to make the steel that built the American West. And they built our neighborhoods. They built our churches. They brought with them a can-do attitude that still exists in this community today. At one time, there were 40 languages spoken at the mill. So all those different cultures sort of molded together to build Pueblo. They've sort of retained their own cultural identities. So we still, each of us, have our own traditions and things like that. But I think that's what makes Pueblo unique in Colorado. Not other cities in Colorado were built in that fashion. Some of them have immigrants now, but I mean, we were built by immigrants from all over the world, as I said, and you can see it in our neighborhoods and our churches and in even on our attitudes today. So I think Pueblo is a much more tolerant community than other places around. So that's what I think makes Pueblo really special, is its people.
That's awesome, Nick. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you.
It's been my pleasure, Ben.
Yeah. Well, if someone's listening to this, they want to get connected to you and your campaign, how can they connect with you?
NickGratisar.com is our website. You can go there and look at the accomplishments that we've got listed over the last 5 years. Or you can give me a call on my cell phone, 719-320-2455. Happy to talk to anybody about any issues that they're having with the city.
That's awesome. Well, Nick, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for listening. This has been the Pueblo Mayor Race Podcast brought to you by the Pueblo Star Journal. Make sure you go listen to the other candidates as well, and then go vote. Make sure you go vote in this year's election. It's a big one. For Ben Kaysen, Nick Gratisar, have a great rest of your day.